Well, and welcome back to the Why Comics podcast, a podcast where we talk about the comic books or comics media that has impacted us and the creators that help make them. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse, and with me today is my co-host, Hannah. Say hi, Hannah.
Hello.
And with us today is someone who wanted to talk about Venom and Venom Let There Be Carnage, something I never thought would happen on this show. It is Matt Storm.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for having me.
When you said, hey, I want to talk about Scott Pilgrim or Venom, I was down to talk about Scott Pilgrim again because it's been like 2 years since we talked about Scott Pilgrim, but I'm like, when am I ever going to get the chance to talk about the chaos that is these movies?
Yeah, I will take any opportunity to proselytize about my Himbiote boyfriend. That's Himbo and Symbiote mixed together. I can't take credit for that. I believe that's a Pilnock original, but either way, it is my new favorite way to describe Venom / Eddie Brock.
I feel like that's a good way to describe them in these movies too. Like, yes, more than anything.
For sure.
Kind of like to introduce you into the show and to kind of get us to Venom. What is your comic book history? What did you like to read a ton of? What do you read now? If you read anything now, and why did you like find this fascination with Venom?
So, I mean, I like to joke that I am a cliche, nerdy, white boy, as the fact that my favorite heroes are Venom, who's an anti-hero, Wolverine, who is a complicated hero, and then Green Lantern, Hal Jordan specifically, because I'm basic. But a lot of my comic book interest comes from my father, actually. The first three comics I ever owned were these compendiums of Green Lantern, Superman, and Batman. And they were these big, different color hardcovers that had, I don't know, the first 100 issues for each character, I think. And I would just flip through them constantly. I don't know that I ever even always read them in order. And they had like full page, like artwork and like bonus stuff. And so like my early comic book love came from that. As I got older, you know, it was a mix of media. I've never just liked superheroes in comic books. I played a lot of video games, which should be no surprise to either of you since both of you follow me on Twitter and I never shut up about it. And so, like, I loved the Spider-Man cartoon from the 90s. I loved Batman, the animated series, the Superman cartoon, Justice League, the X-Men cartoon, like all of that stuff. I grew up on it. And that only furthered my interest in comics, which then, of course, led me to discover the games like Maximum Carnage and Separation Anxiety, both based on comic arcs involving Venom. And, you know, X-Men Arcade's Revenge and X-Men Age of Apocalypse and the X-Men Arcade game. Like, I got a lot of my comic book lore from video games and TV first, and then I went back and explored it. Currently, I'm not reading a ton. Like, I mostly reread old stuff. Like, I recently reread the Alan Moore run of Swamp Thing, which I love. And I recently reread the Scott Pilgrim books because I'm obsessed with Scott Pilgrim. And for those who may not know, yes, Scott Pilgrim is an asshole. Don't be like Scott. I don't care why you love those movies. You can absolutely love them, but he's a douchebag.
Yeah.
Who almost never gets redeemed.
He's a real piece of shit.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a key thing that's totally missed on that.
Yeah. I would say the movie, though, does a good job of trying to at least put him on the path to redemption, which I respect, and is fine, but he's still the douchebag.
Yeah, I don't think the movie did super great, like kind of outlining how big of an asshole he really was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like it was more about making him like a good dude, which like it's cool, but like I'd prefer the original.
Yeah, no, I agree. 100%. But yeah, and so like I sought out comics mostly based on what I found in other media, but I did read a lot of Ultimate Spider-Man after like the first compendium came out. I've read a ton of various DC heroes. Like I'm kind of all over the map and I don't really have any current books. The most recent book I read was when the new Miss Marvel started with Kamala. I picked up the first couple of issues and read those.
Nice.
But like, I don't have a box anymore. My spouse used to, but like just between the two of us and all the other things that we do, comic books is kind of the thing that fell to the wayside. But yeah, every so often I'll buy like a trade, like after playing the recent Guardians of the Galaxy video game, which I love and never shut up about on Twitter. I then put on my Amazon wish list a bunch of the more recent Guardians arcs that are collected in trades that a friend recommended that I'll eventually get and read. Matt Fraction's another favorite. I love Sex Criminals. And I, of course, loved Matt Fraction's run of Hawkeye, which has recently been adapted. The long short answer is I am all over the map when it comes to comic books, but Venom has been a long running favorite character from the first time I saw him in the video games and in the Spider-Man cartoon, which I vividly remember that episode where Spider-Man's in the bell tower, loses the symbiote, it falls onto Eddie, and then they cut to black because the episode ends. And mm-hmm. I swore growing up, also for a slight tangent, Fox is notorious for airing things in the wrong order, right? They did it to Firefly, they've done it to Buffy. I'm convinced they did it with Spider-Man also, because I could have sworn that that episode happened and I had to wait months to see the conclusion. But on Netflix, which is the last place I watched it on a whole, it was like in the middle of a season. And I was like, this can't be right. There's no way. I remember waiting with bated breath to see this awesome character, but it was in the middle of the season. So that was confusing returning to that as an adult, but still holds up.
I wonder if Wikipedia has like air dates and see if those match up. Because I remember Power Rangers doing the same thing, where like they would air.
Yeah, it happened a lot back then.
Yeah, they did it. Also, there was a show called Being Human. I think it was with Michael Ealy and Carl Urban. It was about this future where like androids were not trusted. It was really good, but I remember watching it with my spouse, and like we watched one episode where the two main characters aren't really getting along because it's a human being paired up with an android. And then like the next episode, they're buddy buddy. And then the next episode, they're not getting along again. And I went, this doesn't make any sense. Why would they stumble back that much? And then we found out it was Fox and they aired it out of order. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. This, I don't know if this is a hot take or if this is a cold take, but I have a strong feeling that the Watchmen and Scott Pilgrim are the Catcher in the Rye and the Lolita of like completely misunderstood comic books by a bunch of chuds.
Yes, 100%. I would agree.
Yeah, it's just I feel like those two come up the most, and I'm like, reading old literature, I'm like, this is the same thing all over again, isn't it?
I loved the Watchmen when I first read it. And of course, as a kid, I loved Rorschach because he had the cool mask.
Yeah.
He talked in the voice. And then I rewatched the movie and reread the book years later, both of which I still like for different reasons, and went, oh, fuck.
Rorschach's like a far right lunatic.
Like, yeah. Everybody's the bad guy.
There are no good guys in this comic. Yeah. Even Night Owl, who is like sort of trying to be good, is a bad person. Okay. Yeah. This is just all bad people. Got it. Noted.
So talking about bad people, Venom, I believe you and Hannah probably saw the first Venom way before I did. What was the experience seeing that movie for the first time for both of you?
For me, so I'm a diehard Venom fan. Like, I just love this ridiculous character. Because he's not, there's not much to him, right? He's a pretty cut and dry character in the comics. You know, him and Eddie gets the symbiote. They both like just want to kill Spider-Man, and then they decide, but they want to be a hero, and the Lethal Protector series started. But it was a very action-y, grimy, gritty kind of comic. There was not a lot of, there was some humor because of the rollover from Spider-Man, but it wasn't like humorous. So when I started seeing the trailers for this movie, I went, oh, this is going to be bad. I'm kind of excited because now there's no pressure. And seeing it in the theaters, it came out like right after my birthday. My birthday's in October. And I went with a bunch of friends, and like we went to a bar afterwards, and I was like, this was dumb, but I kind of love it. Is that okay? I kind of love this movie that was so ridiculous and awful. And I fell in love with it. I mean, the lobster scene, Dan, the boyfriend to Eddie's ex, who's just delightful and never plays the jealous archetype boyfriend, is just always genuinely trying to help everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought it was really dumb and really wild. Ended up laughing a lot, even when I wasn't supposed to. I don't know about you, Hannah, how it was in the theaters for you.
I actually did not see it in theaters. I saw it once it came to home video.
Okay.
I just never really got around to it, I guess. but watching it for the first time, you know, I make it a little experience for myself. Big bowl of popcorn. We go get sodas. We go get snacks. We turn off all the lights. We have a pretty nice TV. We have like, you know, good sound bar and shit. So we had a good time, me and my girlfriend, watching it. I like how it's the comic book movie that's most willing to kind of do dumb comic book shit.
Yes.
Which I think is cool. Like, I don't know. I just watched the Eternals last night, and then getting ready for this, I watched Venom 2. And like the juxtaposition of like, oh, we have to be realistic. And then it's just Venom yelling, fuck this guy, and then biting his head off. It's very different.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. I appreciate it a lot for sure.
Yeah. For me, I pushed this off to like basically the very last minute, where like Venom 2 was coming out and it already came out. And I go, you know what? Fine. I will sit down. I have a friend that we watch a lot of the superhero movies together. Yeah, he loved them. He already saw it. And he's like, why don't we just watch the first one? And then we go see the second one. We just rub off the Band-Aid. 1, 2. We'll just do it like that. I'm like, sure, fine. So I came over. I sat down. I watched it. And I was mad at first because I was like, this is just so dumb. It's like too dumb for me. And then I kind of just let it go. And I realized, no. This is the perfect dumb, because to do Venom, like comic book Venom, no one would care.
Yep. Yeah, like, it'd just be like edgelord bullshit.
Yeah, and yep. He's the most self-righteous person after he becomes Lethal Protector. Like it becomes the Punisher, but with the symbiote at times. Yeah. And so like watching...
I mean, at one point, literally.
At one point with Flash, it's literally Punisher. But yeah, Tom Hardy just like giving it his all in the weirdest way.
Yep.
Yeah, he truly loves playing Eddie Brock and Venom. You can tell.
Yeah.
And as long as the guy's having a good time, I think we should make more of him.
I mean, the energy is like palpable too, yeah. Right? Like you can tell it's coming off the screen in waves. You can always tell when someone's having fun, even in a not great movie. And like this is the epitome of that. And like I said this a little bit before we started recording, they gave Venom a personality in this movie. Like,
yeah,
Venom as a symbiote doesn't really have its personality is whoever the host is most of the time, with some variation or exception. But in this, he's his own character. Like the whole line about we're both loser, like the whole losers speech mm-hmm. before the big final battle is so good and so ridiculous.
Yeah, I think my biggest issue is like how little Riz Ahmed's in it, because like yes. as the big bad guy, I think Woody Harrelson's in the sequel way more than what Riz Ahmed is at all in the first movie. And I like Riz Ahmed a lot. I'm like, let him be dumb too. Like, let him be stupid, not just this billionaire psychopath that we get like very little time with.
Yeah, I'll say the second one was definitely built a lot better as a film. Like you get a lot more of each character. There's more of like a plot. And it's also a lot easier to tell the difference between a big red guy and a big black guy versus a big black guy and a big silver guy.
Yeah.
Because that was impossible.
Yeah,
like, the he's final like black battle. And white, and then he's like silver and black. Like that's visually, it's just a mess, you know?
It is a bit weird to have symbiote versus symbiote both movies too. Cause I mean, I know there's a ton of symbiotes, but it's just a bit odd.
Well, I think if they make a third one, we're going to get another symbiote versus symbiote. So.
Like it's Scream or Toxin or something like that.
Yeah. I'm assuming Toxin.
Yeah. Based on what we saw in the second movie, I'm assuming Toxin as well. But like, yeah, the first movie, the whole final battle is a big gray and black mess. And yeah. like, I wanted it to be so much cooler, but it's just so hard to follow the action. At least in the second one, the action was shot better and the characters were easier to follow. I think a big part of that is because it was directed by Andy Serkis, who's like the king of motion capture and is a genuinely good director and writer as well as actor. And so like, I feel like it was in the second one was in much better hands from the get-go. I also love that Tom Hardy has a writing credit on the second one, which is amazing to me. I think that the sight gags and the bits, like the most famous bit coming out of the first movie, you know, the whole turd in the wind speech is funny. It's stupid. Of course it's stupid, but it's funny because he gives that whole speech and then Mrs. Chen asks him, who are you? We are Venom, which is all I wanted. Like the biggest disappointment of the third Sam Raimi movie for me, even though there were a lot of things to be disappointed with, was that Topher Grace's Venom never said "We are Venom." He never said his name once, like nothing. Whereas in this, I got the "We are Venom" scene, which is all I've ever wanted from a movie with Venom. And so like that left me on a high. Also, like Peggy Liu as Miss Chen is doing some amazing work in both movies and is like an all-star. And I will shout her out every time. She was so good.
Yes, especially when Venom like takes over her body. It's just so good in the second one. Yeah. And that's also some that like I feel like Tom Hardy's just playing Tom Hardy in these movies, which is fine. It's not a bad thing. But that's what makes the second one so funny with him beginning the writing credit and everything too. It's just he's so dumb in the first half of that movie. He's maybe the dumbest character. It's the dumbest like jump to first movie to second movie personality that I've ever seen, because he's just an idiot in the first half of that second movie.
Yeah, like just has given in to Venom, and like the whole cooking scene is just what I love about these movies is that whether intentional or not are incredibly queer. Venom and Eddie are in love, like, and they play that up to the max in the second movie. But like the scene where Michelle Williams's character like gets the symbiote to go rescue Eddie, and like they kiss, and then Venom while she's still Venom, like it's just, all of it is like, this is the best queer love story ever in comic book movies. I love it. That's a low bar to hit also, because there aren't many, but still I'll take what I can get.
I find it funny too that the action's so kind of subpar in that first movie, because it's the director of Zombieland.
Yeah.
And I always thought the first Zombieland, at least, I haven't seen the second one, but I always thought the first one had like excellent set pieces and action pieces for those characters. And then you get Venom where it's too dark to see anything ever.
Yeah, but with Sony movies, you never know if it's like how much of it's really the studio like saying, oh no, we don't want you to do this.
Yeah, true.
Which I think maybe Zombieland was Sony too, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think also what I do love about the first one is that almost every transformation scene with Venom is in like enough lighting that you see the breadth of it. Like I'm taken back. Like I recently rewatched the Ang Lee Hulk movie, but not all of it. I like jumped around. I'm like, transformation sequences, while technically impressive at the time, were not great. But what's worse is he's always transforming like in the dark or halfway down a hallway or like, you know, hunched over. And so like you don't really see him becoming the Hulk, whereas like in all the new MCU movies, you see the transformation because we're better at that. And I love that about Venom. Like my favorite is when he's ambushed by the SWAT team and all the lasers are on him and they say, put your hands up, freeze. And like, he puts his hands up and then transforms. Like, it just looks cool. It looks impressive. Like the special effects look really good.
And then the way you can tell like Carnage and Venom transform differently is really cool too. Like Carnage like peels out of Cletus, where Venom just kind of like assimilates with Eddie.
Yeah,
I kind of want to talk about the second one more than the first one, because I think the second one has more going on just as a comic book movie too. Like it is a comic book, like a Todd McFarlane mid-90s. They fire the writer to let the artist write comic book.
Yep.
And I appreciate Woody Harrelson being in a different movie for most of it. And being as goofy as he possibly could be, like not saying like Tom Hardy or Michelle Williams or like super, or even like Stephen Graham, who played the detective, like are super serious throughout it. But it seems like they know what movie they're in, where Woody Harrelson's like, I'm in like Dazed and Confused number two or something.
True.
Yeah,
I mean, a cartoon character against real people.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said this before, but Tom Hardy and Woody Harrelson in this movie are on 11, while everyone else is still somewhere around an 8, and I kind of love it. Naomi Harris, also who plays Shriek, like who I've loved in tons of other things, like just hams up the whole movie, and it's wonderful. Like what I like about this is, besides folks like Stephen Graham and you know a few other folks who are trying to play it as seriously as possible, literally everybody else is just over the top. Like, you know, again, Reed Scott as Dan Lewis, or as I like to call him, Marvel's Dan, and I want him to get his own movie someday, which is a bit I'm stealing from another podcast, but I think it's still true. Like, I love that when in the even in the second movie, even after Eddie's been a nuisance so much, as a doctor, he still just wants to help. He's worried about Eddie. He's not playing the jealous boyfriend type, which is such a easy archetype to shove into something like this. And it's also a very, I would safely say, a straight white perspective on boyfriends, right? That you can't, like, that I think also lends credence to the queer narrative of, like, things feeling more open, more accepting. And, like, yeah, every scene with Woody Harrelson, who I laughed at that post-credit scene in the first movie where they show him in that terrible wig. And I'm like, oh, my God, really? We're doing this? And then, like, they just lean into it in the second one. They don't try and course correct. They just leaned into it. And it felt like a comic book. And one of the reasons I want to advocate for this movie is because this is the anti-Justice League. This is the anti-Batman v Superman. Like, this is a comic that can still be dark and scary and be fun and funny. And, like, you know, and DC since has done some of those. Aquaman and Shazam were both pretty good. Shazam I actually really liked a lot. But, like, I'm tired of gritty reboots. I am excited for the Batman, but, like, it's just another gritty reboot. Fine. Yeah. You know, I'll probably go see it because I love Batman. But, like, what I love about the Venom movies and the reason I want them to continue on and the reason I will pay any money to see Morbius, even though I hate Jared Leto, is because they're just letting these people make weird and wild ass movies. Like, even the new Suicide Squad, like, all these movies are just bonkers. And that's what I want. I want comic book movies that feel like comic book movies. And don't get me wrong, I love the MCU like anybody else. I'm a little fatigued, but, like, I loved Spider-Man No Way Home. I thought it was phenomenal. And I loved Shang-Chi earlier last year, which has become one of my favorite Marvel movies of all time. But, like, for the most part, there's a homogeneity in the MCU that, like, I've accepted that is not in the Sony movies at all. And I'm okay with it. I just love how, buck wild they get.
Yeah, like, comparing, honestly, Venom to the first Suicide Squad movie, they're the same level of silliness and, like, in the way they, like, adapt to comic books, but no one feels like they're having fun in the David Ayer Suicide Squad, except maybe Margot Robbie.
Right.
Who, in a similar vein, also got to be a writer and producer on the next Suicide Squad movie, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and like Birds of Prey, which is even better than those ones. Yeah, absolutely. And I also love that this movie, when it was coming out, was the second Venom movie was pitched as a romantic comedy, which you get that double with having two leads basically being in love.
Yep. Yeah. No, I love that they leaned into it so hard, because in the first movie, like, the first movie wasn't expected to do well, and it's a gangbusters by the standards they had set. And the reason is because people are like, oh my God, it's so stupid. You've got to go see it.
Yeah.
Because to me, stupid is not an insult. Stupid is a compliment. I like stupid things all the time. Like, to me, that's kind of the highest comedy compliment I can pay someone, is saying that they're really stupid, because, like, I love that kind of freedom of ridiculousness. And once I saw the numbers going up for that, I'm like, oh, they're definitely, like, they teased a sequel, but they're definitely making one. And once I heard that Andy Serkis was involved and I saw that first trailer where it's, you know, you say either, I say either, Venom singing along in the background, I was like, oh, this is a romantic comedy. It's dumb. They're going to have a breakup. And, like, the whole club scene in that second film is, it could be queerer, but was still super, like, my boyfriend is mad at me, we're breaking up, I don't need him anymore. Like, that whole speech, it's so great. Thank you, one person. Like, it's just, it was so, like, you couldn't put something like that in a Marvel film, because it's not, it just doesn't fit their reality. But in here, it was perfect.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So for you guys, what is your standout kind of moments for either of the movies?
Good question. I mean, the first movie, I think we all would agree the lobster tank is the standout moment, right?
Like, the most ad-libbed kind of moment of the movie. Yeah, it's pretty funny, but also kind of intense, but how sick Tom Hardy can make himself look.
Yeah, like, that, for me at least, for the first movie, the standout moment is definitely the lobster tank scene, because up until that point, I was in, but I wasn't sure if my friends were, and I was like, I think I just like this bad movie. I don't think there's a lot to like. But from that point on, it just ramps up. And yeah. I was like, oh no, this is the perfect kind of ridiculous, and I'm here for it.
How about you, Han? Do you have a favorite scene from the first one?
It's the lobster scene. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's like the comedic. It's the best, like, it's either that or the scene that Matt mentioned earlier with the kiss.
Yes.
Both are equally just like campy and stupid. And like, who doesn't love stupid shit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the camp is just what sells this movie. And like, yeah, that kiss, it's like in my theater, people were cheering. And I was like, oh my God, I found my people. Because who cheers for Venom kissing Eddie Brock besides me and my broken brain? Did you have a favorite scene, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because like those are like two of the best scenes of that movie. But I also really appreciate just the loser speech that they have. Yeah. It's just so good. And like, when Venom's like, well, I mean, I was a loser on my planet, but that's much better than being a loser here. like you're way worse than I am, kind of thing is so good. I think also my favorite thing about the movies is just how willing it is to let some of the scenes be serious still and not let it all be goofy. Right. Because I think that final fight is like really well done, serious action fight in that first movie, and kind of the same thing with the final fight in the second movie. They're both pretty serious, and there's stakes that feel pretty real overall. Like at a moment, I was watching the second movie, I'm like, are they really gonna let her die? Like, are they really just gonna let Michelle Williams die in this movie, and then both him and Dan have to be like sad? And I was like afraid that she was gonna die.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I'm just realizing now, I think, why I really love these movies is because they just, like, they have no concern for the world around them. And what I mean by that is they are happy to exist in their own little world. Like, we get the post-credit scene where Eddie gets transported to the MCU, though at that time we don't know why, and sees Spider-Man on TV, who he has no connection to, but was like, well, maybe I should go look into that. But like, I just love that beyond that, they just are allowed to exist in their own little world and like make up shit as they go along and be ridiculous and say stupid things. And yeah, it's wild.
And I think for my favorite scene in the second movie is the priest. he's like, I'm going to kill my father. And the priest goes, and it's like, not you, father. And it's just like that joke sticks with me. It's like, yeah. I think it's like this joke that stuck with me the most out of that second movie.
I loved the priest. Like he just kept like, I think at one point he literally goes like, oh Jesus Christ, oh please. Which is very funny to me, knowing like priests and how uppity they usually are. Like he fully broke because he literally, I guess in his mind, probably saw a demon.
I mean, yeah, you see these two creatures are definitely demons.
Yeah, I mean, definitely he's like, got like tentacles and knives coming out of him. And, like that dude's, he's possessing a guy, like literally, you know, like that guy's probably shitting his little robes.
Yeah.
I also love the moment right before that when like this is the first time they truly confront Carnage because Eddie knows what he has to do. And Venom runs away. And he's like, where are you going? He's like, that's a red one. I'm not fighting him. He's like, you keep like the whole argument is like a bickering couple. And he's like, if you get out, I'll let you eat anyone, anybody. And then he just comes out and he's, oh yeah. Which is my favorite gif to use on Twitter now when I'm happy about anything. I just use that Venom gif of him saying, yeah, oh yeah. Like I love that whole moment because it's literally a couple arguing before a big moment.
Yeah.
Like, there's no two ways about it. You can't nitpick and go, oh, they're just friends. Like that is a couple in love arguing about what to do next. I've seen that. I've been in that situation. Like, and I love it. It's just, it's so like the first movie had some queerness in it, but they let them be a full-on couple in this movie. And it's what makes the movie work, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they literally break up in the second one and
yeah.
And then Venom yells that he's out of the closet.
Yeah. It's so good. It's so good. Like, I love that, again, that Venom has a personality and that he got to have that personality on his own in those scenes in the club. and still, and like, it's like they, you know, there were drag queens there. There were people of what seemed like all walks of life there. And like, everyone's just rallying behind this weird guy they think is in this really big costume going through a breakup. Like, there's no, there's no hesitance. There's no fear. Like in any other Marvel film, Venom walks into a club like that, everyone would have freaked out and ran away. That never happens. It doesn't happen at all.
Yeah, I think, I guess my only complaint for that second one is that they don't explain really what Carnage is. Like we know he's an offspring, and so, but like when he says it's a red one, I'm like, I just wish we had a little bit more, just a little bit more of what that means.
I also like, I've read a lot of comic books, but like I had to look up why he was upset that he was a red one.
Yeah.
Like that's not like a, that's not even like a thing. I think it's something like a deep cut from like one issue or something, but it's like because he bonds with the blood and it makes him more powerful.
Yeah.
But like there was no explanation for that. It's just that he was scared of the color red. Like it was just a weird scene. It was fun though.
And it's one of those things too, where like, you don't even have to explain the blood part. You could just say like offspring are always more powerful, because that's really what it boils down to too, with a lot of the symbiotes in the comics. They all get different powers every time they mutate, because they just, they're basically predators. They just evolve after they separate. So I was hoping for more. Maybe we'll get more in the third of like what actually the symbiotes are, because if we're going to be comic booky, let's get kind of silly comic booky with really weird lore dumps.
Yeah, I hope we get like even the really wacky ones, like Hybrid and like all, you know, Lasher and
Structor 5000 or whatever the fuck his name is.
Yeah, like
there's one that has a really stupid name.
The separation anxiety symbiotes and beyond are just so freaking weird. And like, I want that. And what I love about these movies and why I think they are great comic book movies is because they give us an opening into those worlds. I mean, before we got to Thanos in the MCU, I didn't really know what was possible. Now that Thanos and Endgame has happened, like the fact that we're going to eventually get some version of Kang the Conqueror, I never thought possible in the past, but now absolutely believe is possible.
Yeah. But
even still, I still feel like these two movies are being more comic booky and like recklessly wild than any other comic book movie that's ever been made. And I think that alone makes them worth respecting and enjoying. Like,
yeah, I agree.
But you have to let go. Like you said, you did, Jesse, like you have to let go of this needs to be like the comic. I saw Wolverine Origins just like everybody else and hated it just like everybody else. But Wolverine's one of my favorite characters, and it was a bad movie beyond being inaccurate. Whereas like this is accurate and accurate, who knows, but it's fun. It's just a good time.
I will say, I like Carnage's origin better. Oh, sorry.
I was just about to say, if you could feel them having a good time while making them.
Yeah.
I like Carnage's origin way better in this than in the comic books.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, oh, Venom like dropped his kid on accident in a jail cell that they happened to share. And then Cletus like cuts his hand open while he's doing push-ups or something. And then it just goes into his bloodstream that way. That doesn't make any fucking sense. The biting thing, at least it's like interesting, you know?
Right. And that's why it's in the bloodstream, right? Like, because he bit into him. He swallowed it.
Yeah.
Like, he was bleeding. There was
checks blood out, involved. You know? It's way more sense than like, oh, I got a little scrapey on the concrete floor and that's how I got a symbiote.
Yeah.
Other symbiotes that we might see in the later movies, there's Scream, there's Lasher, there's Phage, there's Agony. We all assume Riot's going to be the next one. There's Hybrid, there's Toxin, there's Anti-Venom, there's Null, which I doubt we'll ever get to Null. I feel like Null's an MCU.
Fuck it, why not, right?
it'd be funny. It would be funny if we got to Null, because it would be Tom Hardy fighting this space god.
Oh, wait, well, hold on. I guess, I don't know, that's a stupid rights bullshit thing that I like to think about. Because Null isn't like a Spider-Man character, technically, so I guess they wouldn't be allowed to.
Because Null's introduced in Thor,
his own comic book,
yeah,
and in Wraith, which is a Marvel book. Like that's something weird to think about. Whatever.
But then there's also like Mr. E, Dreadface, Ruined Venom, Neo Symbiote, Exolion,
Payback. I think ZZZXXX is the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. I like that there's one that just called X-Men Blue.
Yeah.
Well, that's from, I actually remember this off the top of my head. The X-Men were like, the X-Men Blue team, they were like in space transporting a symbiote, and then the symbiotes broke out. And like they temporarily bonded with X-Men Blue to help them like fight bounty hunters. It's so stupid.
Silence is a new one, which I think would be interesting because Silence is basically a sleeper agent. It's bonded to a soldier that doesn't know that it's been bonded. So when Silence activates, the soldier's brain basically shuts down and doesn't know it's done something. That would be actually pretty terrifying for
Mr. Hyde. Interesting. Yeah.
I think these movies are good in the sense of you got like 4 hours to kill and you want something goofy.
Yeah. Like, do you want comic book movies that you don't have to think that much about? I mean, honestly, it's why I loved Shang-Chi so much, other than it just being a great movie and a well-made movie, is I can take Shang-Chi to my father who likes comic book movies but just can't keep up with everything and go, here, you'll probably enjoy this. And besides the Trevor stuff, there's nothing to not understand. It's just a pretty straightforward narrative. And like, I feel like Venom is the same way. Like, it's weird. And like, you have questions just about why it's so weird, but the through line of the narratives is not that hard to follow.
Yeah.
And especially in the second one, like, I feel like you could even see the second one without having seen the first one. If you have a basic working knowledge of what Venom is, you don't even need the first movie.
It's kind of just like a slice of life for you at that point instead of like, you don't need the origin as long as you're just like, oh yeah, they're just like two people that like live in the same body, basically. You're good.
Yeah.
And I know this isn't a podcast about Shang-Chi, but yeah, I did like the fact that it was kind of similar. It was like it's its own world, and like they're both set in San Francisco, which is funny enough.
Yeah.
But like, I kind of didn't like the way that they just kind of shoehorned the MCU in at the end, where they were like, oh yeah, and he has Carol Danvers' phone number. And okay. Like, it's just, yeah, stuff like that, like, kind of always ruins it, where there's like, how do we connect it to this next thing? Yeah. And so I do appreciate that the Venom movies can kind of just be their own thing.
Yeah, even like the post-credit scene for the second one, even though they're like, eh, you wanted to see Venom in the MCU, and then Kevin Feige, spoilers for Spider-Man, is like, you don't really get it.
Yeah, I was going to say spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home, but they just kind of yoink it right back. They're like, we'll keep Venom, thanks, but Tom Hardy can go.
Yeah, which
sucks. I mean,
it does.
I like Tom Hardy's Venom.
I do like Tom Hardy's Venom too, and it does suck. But I do love the idea, though, that there's potential for me in my 40s, probably because I'm closer to those than my 30s at this point. That in my 40s, I'll have a Tom Hardy Venom series that's just buck wild, and then an MCU Venom that'll be more reserved, but I'll have two Venoms.
Yeah, you'll get two.
Because
I think any potential Tom Holland Venom arc would be very interesting.
I think Tom Holland could break bad pretty hard.
Yeah, and like, especially getting into, again, a little bit of No Way Home spoilers, so I guess skip ahead a little bit if you don't want to hear them. Like, we're finally at teenage, like a young adult Peter, right? He's got his own place. He's on his own. He's broke as hell.
Getting
his GED and still being Spider-Man. And so that's essentially where the old cartoon started. And then he was in college and at the time and all that, but he's still a broke college student. And like, I'm looking, those are some of my favorite era of Spider-Man. And like, that's when something like Venom would have happened anyway.
Yeah.
So it didn't make sense for it to connect directly. But like, I am excited at the idea that now the MCU is like, we're going to do our own version of Venom. My suspicion, though, is that we might get Agent Venom first, only because they pushed Flash Thompson a lot in the new movie. They've pushed him in the other movies. I actually like this incarnation of Flash Thompson because it's kind of like a more modern millennial douchebag instead of a jock, which I like because it's kind of the same role.
I just can't see this one joining the military like the old.
Yeah,
one,
he's a little right. too much of a nerd still.
Yeah.
What I find fascinating though,
drone is pilot Flash Thompson.
Right.
No Way Home is very much a movie about wrath too, in a lot of ways. So it's funny that like Venom kind of gets little bit sidelined
a little bit,
yeah, to bring that in. And if that does happen, I think we'll get like, say what, like Spider-Man 3 is not a good movie, but I think what Sam Raimi was doing with Venom, because he was forced to do something with Venom, was very interesting. And it's Sam Raimi going, well, Venom is just a 70s swinger suit that you get to share with people. And like, it's kind of fun that we'll have these three different versions of Venom in live action if they do give us Venom in the MCU. And it's, and they're all kind of fun in their own way at times. I still think that Sam Raimi one has a lot, the most, is going to have the most flaws no matter what, because it's just kind of what happened with Sony. But it's still kind of fun going back and just like saying, you know what, it's Sam Raimi doing 60 Spider-Man. Let's just let it go. I have a couple of just thoughts about Venom that I want to like present as questions. What do we want to see in the third movie? I'll let you guys go first on that.
I mean, so obviously more couple bickering, more like now they understand each other, right? So now they're in deep love. They're past the honeymoon stage, and now they're into like the marriage stage or the long-term relationship stage, where it's constant compromise and learning to understand each other and holding each other when you need to. And like, I want some more slice of life stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Big Bad is going to be tough, right? Because now also remember, we have this Morbius movie coming out that also seems to exist in the MCU, because in the trailers he talks to Vulture. So
that trailer's the most confusing thing now, because the way because he talks to Vulture, but they directly talk about Venom in that trailer too, like twice. And so it's so fascinating. And also I have this thing where there's certain lines in movies I just really hate. There's like one in The Dark Knight that I don't like, and there's one in Batman vs Superman that I don't like. And the Morbius trailer, if that line's in the movie, it will take the number one spot. And it's him talking to the bad guy and saying, "Oh, don't worry, I'm just Dr. Michael Morbius." Like, why would you ever tell someone your full name?
Yeah.
While you're stopping a crime or anything.
Yeah. Also, you should know that name sounds sinister as shit. Like,
yeah,
if I was going into like a surgery and Dr. Michael Morbius, I would cancel. I'd be like, I gotta go. That's a little fucked up of me, but like, yeah, I'm not. I don't trust that dude. Sorry, you have a creepy name.
Yeah, but like, so I'm curious, because Venom 3 is absolutely going to depend on what happens with Morbius, right? I have a feeling that the trailer scene of him talking to Vulture won't exist. I think that was slipped in and was shot because they thought they were connecting everything. But with Venom being Eddie Brock, Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock getting plucked back to his own universe, I just feel like it's either one of two things. It's confirming that there will be a Venom running around in the MCU, and that's what he's referencing, or he's not in there and that Vulture scene doesn't exist. It can't be both, right? Like, it wouldn't make sense. And also more importantly, Kevin Feige is not that sloppy, right? Like, he's threaded the needle,
just different version of Vulture or something,
right? Which could be, right, because we've talked about multiverses now, so it's perfectly possible that Michael Keaton is playing a different Vulture, or
Keaton straight up playing a different person.
Yeah, which would be great. Oh man, imagine if Michael Keaton is the Norman Osborn of that world. Oh
my god, always playing Craven. I'd love to see Michael Keaton play Craven.
That would be amazing.
I'm still holding out for hope that we get Carl Urban as Craven in the MCU. That's just
me. I mean, that would be, I mean, that's also excellent.
If we can reuse casting people, get him out of Thor, put him in Spider-Man.
And once you put him in hair, he looks different enough.
Yeah, and, totally. And then what, give him, let him use
they the made Gemma Chan blue.
Yeah.
And then they gave her a different role, so fuck it.
Yeah. And who is it from Shang-Chi who's in Guardians? I can't remember her name. She's the aunt. Blanking on her name, the actress.
Guardians?
Oh no, she's the aunt in Shang-Chi, but she was in Guardians too.
Michelle Yeoh?
Yeah, she was the one, the original Guardians.
Oh.
Yeah,
I do not remember
Sylvester
that.
Sylvester Stallone, I believe.
Oh, right. Yeah, she was part of the original crew that ran with Sylvester Stallone. That's right.
Like Starhawk and stuff. Okay.
Yeah. In the second movie, like she's in one of the scenes or whatever.
Yeah, she's like very brief.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to think plot wise what they would do. My assumption is since they went to Carnage, it would be either Maximum Carnage or Separation Anxiety. But the thought, the idea, what we're left with is that both Shriek and Carnage are dead by the end of this movie. But we do see Toxin.
Yeah.
So like Toxin is obviously going to be the villain on some level, but I do assume that they will adapt some version of Separation Anxiety or Maximum Carnage where Venom is now, like, there are too many symbiotes or there are more symbiotes, but I feel like that needs some kind of spin to make it more interesting than, oh, he's fighting another symbiote. It was Riot, then it was Carnage, now it's Hybrid. Like, that'll get dull, so there has to be more to it than that. I think, even if we don't get Kraven in the MCU, I think a Kraven, like, Venom versus Kraven the Hunter, like,
yeah,
he hunts the most dangerous game. Like, that could be an interesting story. Kraven's hunting
symbiotes down for the government.
Right. There you
go. Fuck it.
Yeah, like he becomes a gun for hire for the government to take them down. Like, I think that could be really interesting. But I don't, it's hard for me to pick. Like, honestly, I had no idea what to expect from the second one. And it was so off the wall that it's just kind of hard to imagine what the second one would have. I mean, wouldn't mind having another symbiote, but like, I want it to go bigger. I want it to be crazier. There are so many weird villains in Spider-Man's catalog that I feel like, a part of me also is worried that it's going to be Morbius versus Venom, because he's going to be the lethal protector finally, because him and Eddie agree on the title in the second movie. And so I'm afraid that Morbius, they're bringing him in just so then Morbius can fight Venom. And I don't want that, but I have a suspicion that could be the case too.
Throw a bunch of money at Alfred Molina and let him be a goofy Doc Ock that has to try to solve the Venom issue.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we're going to get Toxin for sure.
Yeah.
But like, Toxin's also like not like a villain character.
Yeah.
He's more just like another agent Venom, if I remember right. Because like, yeah, Mulligan's too good of a person because he's a fucking cop or whatever.
Yeah.
He won't let the symbiote hurt people or something like that. I feel like I distinctly remember something like that. So I feel like maybe we'll get one fight in the beginning with Toxin, but then they'll realize that they need to be on the same team against whatever actual villain they put in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, also, that sounds about right.
I have a hard time believing that actor who plays the cop. I have a hard time believing he's not Wahlberg. Every time I see him, I think he's Donnie Wahlberg.
he looks not like a Wahlberg for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, he does. He's. I mean, I know him from Snatch. Is the more famous movie I know him from. He's a working actor who's been in a ton of stuff, and like, his take on Toxin would be really interesting. And like, I mean another kind of cool movie would be like a buddy cop movie with Venom and Toxin, and Venom trying to show Toxin the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since the Detective Mulligan really didn't get along with Eddie Brock. Like, to then, like, if we went from a romantic comedy to, like, a buddy movie, a reluctant buddy movie, that would actually also be really great.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, maybe Spider Slayers, but I kind of am tired of superheroes fighting the military. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of good sometimes that they do, but I think we've seen it enough.
Yeah, I would agree.
My second question I had written down for this part is, are these movies secretly cinema? Because honestly, I think that they're smarter than people give them credit for, because they know what they're doing and they're doing it right. And I think that's what counts the most.
I mean, I think the first one was a happy accident. I think Tom Hardy, when he, because Tom Hardy got cast as Eddie Brock ages before this movie came out, and then it was on hiatus, and then it was paused, and then it was maybe coming back. He put his own money and his own time into it in a very Ryan Reynolds way to make it happen. And so to be as unhinged as like the Deadpool movies have been is unsurprising to me, considering how Tom Hardy kind of got so involved with it and was so excited to be a part of it. But I would say that the second one, I think, is the example of what a good non-MCU comic book movie could be like. Because again, the DC movies get some stuff right. Like, I loved Birds of Prey. Birds of Prey was a perfect movie. And I thought the second Suicide Squad was a lot of fun. But for the most part, you know, DC wants everything grim and gritty, and it seems like that's not changing anytime with the Batman and what I've heard and what we've seen from the Flash and Black Adam movies are also both going to be super heavy and super serious. And it's like, okay, fine. Like, I'll watch them. I've watched all of this stuff. Like, I can't not, because I get so, like, I just want to know and I want to see. But like, I think if you want to do something a little darker, but with still humor and like a humanity, I think you're right. I think the second movie is secretly comic book movie cinema, because it hits the nail on the head of what we want from a raucous, over the top comic book movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's going to win any awards or anything, no. But like, it's a good movie. Like, I don't know. Like, I used to do this thing back when I was in film school and pretentious, where I would distinguish between a film and a movie, but like, who gives a shit, you know? Yeah. If you paid money to go see it and you like it, then like, that's all that really matters.
Yeah. And my last question I had is, do you think they'll kiss? Now, we talked about how they kissed in the first movie, but like, Venom not possessing anybody and Eddie like actively romantically kissing him. Do you think that's gonna happen?
Like, just coming out of his back and giving him a little smooch?
Yeah, a little smooch smooch.
I don't know, but I think I know what my next art piece is gonna be.
Oh my God, Hannah, please. I will buy it and hang it on my wall in a heartbeat. Yeah, no, I don't know, but I want it. Like, I want it bad. Because I love this version of Venom. And I never thought I would love a movie version of a character more than a comic book version. But like, mm-hmm. this time I definitely do. But also, like, I learned a lot last year about comic books and what they can do. Like, I thought the Guardians movies were like the best version of the Guardians. And then I played that game and went, oh no. We've been short shrifted these last like 5 years or whatever.
If we actually got Glenn Howerton as Star-Lord.
Dennis
from Always Sunny.
Yeah, perfect.
It would have been more like the game, sure.
Yeah, totally.
I also imagine like
being
like,
a piece of shit. It's my favorite Star-Lord ever.
Guardians 2 is my favorite part of comic book Guardians is the Abaddon Landing stuff, which is them coming out of being war veterans basically for like the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, which is like a lot of what they pulled from for the game too, because they talk about the war a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of missed that in the movies more than anything. It's like, you know, this war really messed up all of them, and it's very important.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I don't love about the movies that I love about the game is that you get to grow with these characters. Nobody is romantically involved with anyone else. Well, except Star-Lord sleeping around, but like, not involved with any of the Guardians. And like, there's a lot of heart in that story as they actually bond, whereas in the second movie and even in Endgame and Infinity War, like, they're still bickering, they're still fighting, they don't trust each other, they don't get along. And it's like, I'm ready for the Guardians to grow up because they're actually a fun group. And what I love about, to bring it back to the Venom movies, is like, Eddie is kind of wishy-washy and a reluctant hero, but by the end of the second movie, he's like, with the end of the first movie, and then even again comes around again in the second movie, like, he understands what he needs to do. He's accepted his lot in life, and now he's just going to try and figure it out. But he's still kind of a himbo bumbling around, and I enjoy that. I don't need all of my heroes to be the best at what they do. It's fun when they are sometimes, but like, I also like these movies because they let these characters be flawed.
Yeah.
Whereas like, to the detriment of Spider-Man in the MCU until this most recent movie, where he does get to fail multiple times and like really be on his own. Like, he had Stark paying for his stuff, and it sucks because like, Peter's ingenuity and ability to do stuff on his own is like why he's an interesting Spider-Man, you know?
They fully hit the brakes on Peter not necessarily being like his own person in this last movie, because they're like showing how smart he is and how he can like, make his own suit. And all like, that just came out of nowhere as far as the MCU goes. Like, the last suit he made was just like goggles and a hoodie.
Yeah.
And like, but it's nice that at least they're attempting it, right? And like,
we're it's nice to see that they're course correcting. It's just like it was weird to see like in Far From Home, May was like a multimillionaire philanthropist, and like, that was kind of just like a sly reference to Feast, but now they're like kind of broke again and she's running Feast even though she can't pay the bills. And it's, where did this come from? I appreciate that they're like going for it, but it's like, that's a quick little retcon, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it, part of it is the further they get from Stark's death and like trying to live on their own, maybe they're making...
No, that totally makes sense. Yeah. It's just not like outlined in the movie. So I guess it makes less sense as far as the story goes.
For sure. Because it's like, it's something that happened in the background, and because we only get them for a couple hours every few years.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I guess we can assume that change happened, but who the hell knows? Whereas like in the Venom movies, we're not concerned with those kinds of details because we're kind of taking everything at face value. And I think that's why these movies thrive, because there's also not 10 to 12 other movies of continuity to worry about with Venom here. You can just worry about Venom and his small little world and living in San Francisco for now, and then go from there. Whereas everything else that's in the MCU, like, I'm sad that this Venom is not in the MCU, but I'm also kind of happy because then we'll still be able to continue on this Buckwild path to who knows where.
You know? Yeah. I think like the biggest issue with like seeing those what feels like out of left field changes in characters in the MCU is we have these group movies now that you have like two to five heroes in one movie, and they're all getting these buffers, these changes in their personalities and things because of the plot. But since there's no time to really spend with them, when they get their solo movies again, their personalities have definitely been like aged or changed or something. And you're like, well, wait a second. I guess that happened in the last one, but if you didn't see it, you don't know. Like, I'm thinking like Doctor Strange now going in Multiverse of Madness. He's going to be changed because of what happened in Spider-Man, but he's so little in that movie, you don't really see it.
Yeah.
And then that's also going to be confusing because Multiverse of Madness was supposed to come out before No Way Home, and then all that other real world bullshit that happened.
Yeah. And so, and like, I think the same thing, like people talk about like how much Star-Lord sucks because of what happens in Infinity War. And I'm like, yeah, but I feel like if we had more time with Star-Lord, we would understand that action.
Right.
And we would understand more why these actions, these small like actions happened. But when you're juggling 30 characters for at max a two hour and 45 minute movie, which is a long movie for a lot of people now. You can't give all these characters the stuff they need.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like with the smaller movies like the Venoms or like the Suicide Squad to Birds of Prey to Suicide Squad 2, like you can see Harley's arc completely.
Yeah.
And like in Suicide Squad 2, when she kills that dictator, like, but after trying to romance him and find happiness, like if it were old Harley, she would have fell for him and done his every bidding. But because she realized she was falling into a trap again and that she's now a changed person, she took agency, she took control, killed him and ran off. Like she wasn't a damsel in distress again. And like that growth doesn't happen on screen for a lot of characters in the MCU, but because it's only been a couple of movies, they were able to do that with Harley. And I feel like here, even with Venom, like the growth of Eddie trying, learning to trust and learning to understand, really getting what Venom needs from him and how to be a hero. Like, we can see those small moments in these Buckwild isolated movies that we rarely see, like Hannah pointed out, in the MCUs, especially in the three Spider-Man movies. Like, it's kind of just a hard shift.
Yeah. And like, I kind of like use my ideas, like if you can't give them their own solo movie, give them a TV show. Cause I think hit or miss is some of the Marvel TV shows have been like, at least these characters at least have like time to breathe. And it's been kind of nice to hang out with them for like 5 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'm a big Hawkeye nerd, so like that knowing that show was coming out, knowing it was based on Matt Fraction, like I was very excited for it. Well, it wasn't perfect. I thought like it hit the lighter side of the MCU really well, while still telling a good, fairly isolated story again that like relied on some of the bigger picture stuff, but you could understand Hawkeye in isolation as well. And like, yeah, I think more of this stuff, like I'm glad that Disney Plus is doing TV shows. I'm glad that like Moon Knight and She-Hulk and Ms. Marvel are all debuting in TV shows, because I think that's, you can't tell those characters' stories in a movie. Like, I just don't think it works.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I think the miniseries route should be what more of the MCU goes down. I feel like we get more like, yeah, you get less of, oh, we only get a couple hours with these characters throughout years versus, like, you know, we get a few more hours with them. Like, you get to build them out a little bit more as characters, and you get to see, like, the little ways, like, Kate and Clint interact, for instance. Like, that maybe would have gotten skipped in, like, a movie where it's, yeah, like, Kate Bishop Hawkeye or whatever.
I mean, like, as extremely messy as its politics were, Falcon Winter Soldier is some of the best Bucky stuff in that, yeah, in the entire MCU, because he had time to just hang out and chill out, and
yeah, it just humanizes them a little bit more.
Yeah,
yeah, totally.
And I'm glad that it seems like DC's kind of picking up on that a bit, doing Peacemaker and doing the Gotham show that they're planning on doing and stuff like that. Like hopefully they pick up on that a bit more. It's like, these side characters that you have that are really good and they have really cool backgrounds, give them time to show off their backgrounds, then put them in the group shows or the group movies.
Yeah, I mean, the CW shows, even though I fell off them because it became too much, was doing it pretty well. They weren't perfect, mm-hmm, but like, they were all entertaining, and like, I enjoyed Flash for a while. I enjoyed all of them for a while until I couldn't keep up. But like, yeah, and then doing the big crossover events every year, like, it's exhausting, but it's a cool way to see that stuff developed. And like, I hope that DC continues to grow that way and branch out that way too, because I think, while I like DC, and like, I even can find some love in the awful Green Lantern movie, just because I'm so desperate for a Hal Jordan Green Lantern movie, and what I got was not that. I think that DC has the ability to create stories with so much more heart than even Marvel does because of the source material. But you have to stop letting folks like Zack Snyder make any of it, because, yeah, he doesn't understand. And like, again, the movies that some of the movies he's made are not awful. They're just not true to what the heart of this stuff is. You can make changes. You can even make Superman have to have killed someone. But the problem is that there was no heart in Man of Steel to warrant that decision. It's not that that decision was wrong and shouldn't have been in the movie. It's everything else that came before it. And I think if you understand the soul of these characters, which, to bring it back to Venom, Andy Serkis, especially in this movie, and Tom Hardy, understand the soul of Venom and what this character is trying to do and what they're trying to do with it. Same for Carnage. And I think that's why this movie was such a success and why it was so much fun, is because even if you get the basic, even if you change the world or make mistakes in the canonical choices, if you understand the heart of the character, you can still portray it in a way that people will enjoy.
Yeah, and I agree with like the Snyder stuff. Like, my biggest thing is, like, if you're gonna show someone have massive regret for an action that they have, and the next movie we see nothing about them being haunted by that action, then, where's this character growth, that there is a consistency of what the character's last actions were and what their future actions are, and I think you're missing the point if you're making a DC universe and the heart of your DC universe is Batman. Like, yep, love him to death, but he is not the heart of that universe.
No, the beacon has always been Superman.
Yeah, Superman, Wonder Woman, Nightwing, those are your three, and the Flash. Like, if we're gonna give like a couple of like center points, those, yeah, should be your center points, and it was never really that.
Nope.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about Venom.
It was my pleasure. I can't believe you said yes, to be honest, because most people look at me like I'm a lunatic when I want to talk about these movies. I think why I love them so much is I was just so tired of, I enjoy the MCU movies as much as anybody else. I even didn't mind the Eternals. Like I said, I loved No Way Home. Like, as someone who grew up on all of the Spider-Man movies, was such a revelation. But like, Venom, you could just turn your brain off and enjoy it in the same way I like enjoy the Transporter movies, and I enjoy the Fast and the Furious movies. Like, not all movies need to be high art or brilliantly made. Sometimes they can be good, and that's fine. And these are perfectly good movies that I enjoy and loved watching. And so I'm so glad I got to come here and talk about it. Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you and everything you do on the internet?
So many places. The best place to find me is at @DJ_Stormageddon on Twitter. I post everything there. Some might say I tweet too much, but is there really a such thing as too much? The answer, folks, is yes, there is. You can find all of my podcasts that I host and my Twitch stream and my merch store at djstormageddon.com, no underscore there. I host a TV and movie podcast, a podcast dedicated to the Mass Effect franchise, a podcast more generally about video games, and an interview series that I've done for a long time. Plus, I produce and edit a bunch of other shows, too. It's a lot. DJStormageddon.com is the best place. Go there. You'll find links to literally everything.
And Hannah, my wonderful co-host, where can people find you on the internet?
I am twitter.com/_Hannah23. You can also find me on Instagram at the same thing. I post art and, you know, I'm here every, 2 weeks at this point?
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah, I'm here mostly. I just had an article come out at Uppercut about Boyfriend Dungeon and my childhood trauma. I also will be writing in some new places soon, so we'll see.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Y Comics Pod. You can find me on Twitter at Sleeper of the Bed if you care about that. I do another podcast that's still currently on hiatus with our friend Matthew, and that is Free Reeling It. You can email us if you want to email us about anything at ycomicspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to be a guest on the show, have questions for future guests, or have stories about comics impacted you, you can reach me and Hannah at those places. I want to thank our Patreon producers. It's the first time me having to say this. Anthony Greco and Patrick Mullman. If you want to support us on Patreon and be a producer yourself, or just get the stuff ad-free and early and some of the bonus stuff we're going to be putting out soon, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/ycomics. If you like the show, tell a friend, leave a review. Logo is done by Zach Russell. You can find their work everywhere at Cavity Crew. And the theme is Join the Restaurant by David Zetzi. And remember, everybody, Captain America, punch Nazis.